This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. After a week hiatus, it's again time to review the week in state politics. Mitch Kokai from the conservative John Locke Foundation is here. So too is Rob Schofield of the progressive NC Policy Watch. Hi, guys.
Hey, Jeff.
Good to see you, Jeff.
We have new legislative maps. For now, state lawmakers enacted new political boundaries this week as ordered by a federal court. The maps will now get reviewed by three judges, and the plaintiffs who successfully sued over the current maps being illegal will get to make their case as to why these new maps just passed still don't pass muster. Mitch, there's a district in Guilford County where 60% of the voters are African American. There are multiple districts in Mecklenburg County that didn't have to be redrawn, but they were. Is it only a matter of time until the courts strike down some of these new maps?
It'll be very interesting to see. The procedure that the General Assembly applied this time around was the same procedure that it took to redrawing the congressional maps, which was saying, look, you told us that we had an illegal racial gerrymander, so we are not taking race into account at all. When questioned about the racial makeup of their districts, they said, well, if you have the information, Democratic legislators, pass it along to us because we don't have it. And I think they are hoping that the strategy that they use that so far has been successful with the congressional elections will hold true with the legislative elections. But as you said, the plaintiffs argue differently, saying, look, this racial component that caused these maps to be struck down is still there, and you redrew more the legislative districts than you have to, thus violating the state constitution. So the courts are going to strike this down again. We'll see. I mean, we know that this three-judge panel is already pretty angry at the General Assembly for the pace at which it's approached this process. So I don't think that they're going to be giving the General Assembly much benefit of the doubt.
It seems to me that the Republicans are trying to throw a Hail Mary here. I think they have some notion that this three-judge panel is unlikely to approve this. They're going to still see this as an illegal gerrymander. But they have some notion that because of the way they've done this, that maybe they can turn Clarence Thomas around at the U.S. Supreme Court. But I think there's very small likelihood that the court won't strike this down also as an unlawful racial gerrymander. And there's no doubt that it is an egregious partisan gerrymander. We still know for a fact that two-thirds of the districts lean strongly Republican in a state that's evenly divided. And I think eventually, if this isn't the end of gerrymandering, gerrymandering has sort of entered its death throes, and this is part of that battle.
One of the problems that we face with this, Jeff, is that there are so many moving pieces in this redistricting debate. And it would be better for all concerned, probably, except for the lawyers who were involved in both sides of the case, if North Carolina could wait until the Supreme Court deals with the issue of partisan gerrymandering, as it will in the fall with the Wisconsin case. And if the court does, in fact, strike down partisan gerrymandering, then North Carolina, we would hope, would have some sort of standard from the Supreme Court about how it can proceed. Right now, they're proceeding under the notion that we can't have this racial gerrymandering as just decided, changing the precedent in the last case of Harris v. Cooper, but we can still have as much partisan gerrymandering as we want because the courts have not struck it down. If the courts strike down partisan gerrymandering, they're going to have to go back perhaps and do this all again.
I think it's been pretty clear from the courts that racial gerrymandering is illegal. We have most states in the country that are managing to find the sweet spot, to find a way to give African Americans a chance to elect representatives without just cordoning them off all into a handful of districts, which is what the last set of maps did. Now we've sort of gone back the other direction where we're going to have it more like it used to be in the old days where African Americans can scarcely elect anybody to the legislature. I don't think it's that complicated. I think that what's happening is that the Republicans are just finding new ways to get around what are pretty clear standards, actually.
The governor has been noticeably silent during this redistricting process. What do you make of that, if anything?
He doesn't get to participate in it. It's one of the strange aspects of the North Carolina veto law that the governor doesn't get to participate.
Yeah, in fact, when the governor first got a veto in North Carolina, the Democrats who were in charge of the General Assembly at the time had this notion in the back of their head that, you know, we may have another Republican governor one day, and so let's make this veto as weak as it potentially can be. To override a veto, you need 3/5 rather than 2/3 of the vote of the two chambers. The governor cannot veto anything dealing with redistricting. He cannot veto anything dealing with a local bill. And that was by design, the General Assembly trying to keep as much power as possible.
I recognize that. But to push it a little bit further, we haven't even heard from the governor, you know, the bully pulpit of North Carolina. It doesn't seem like he has taken an opportunity here to rail against these new maps, as seems to be the position of Democrats. Maybe I'm looking too much into it.
Well, perhaps it was because his first response to redistricting made him seem a little bit overeager. Once the ruling came down from the U.S. Supreme Court against the maps, gets the legislative maps, Governor Cooper came out and said, okay, there's going to be a special session. It can only last 2 weeks. You got to get it done, and then it's got to go back. And people said, whoa, the General Assembly hasn't even gotten the decision from the court back. Plus, you can't tell them how long any of their sessions could be. And so perhaps he's still smarting a little bit from that and just is willing to let other Democrats lead the charge against these districts.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible that, you know, he's waiting for the right moment to do that. There's going to be, at some point, the General Assembly is going to be out of session, we think. We don't think they're going to be here forever and permanently. And that's the time where the governor sometimes starts to reclaim the stage a little bit more in the political debate. And this will be an obvious topic I'm sure he'll be emphasizing.
All right. On Wednesday night, an environmental omnibus bill, that's a hodgepodge of things, reemerged. It repeals a ban on plastic bags along the Outer Banks, establishes a beach renourishment fund, and provides money to local entities in Wilmington. This in the aftermath of the Gen X chemical spill, which has gotten into drinking water down southeast part of the state. The governor wanted about five times as much money and for that money to go to a state agency. Is this an appropriate first step, or are the two sides playing politics with what appears to be a very serious issue?
Well, for years, the Republican legislature has been doing its utmost to defang the Department of Environmental Quality, where it used to be called the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. They've slashed its appropriations, they've slashed funding, they've slashed staffing in any number of areas. They've tried to pass laws to limit the adoption of new rules and regulations. And now all of a sudden we've got a disaster, the kind of thing you tend to get when you don't have strong environmental laws. But they hate the idea of letting Governor Cooper be involved in leading the charge to fight this. And so they're doing everything they can to funnel the money some other place. In this case, local government, a local university. And I don't think anybody really thinks it's adequate what they've done. But I think it's clearly a political move to avoid letting Governor Cooper be involved with it.
Back to your initial question, I think the answer could be yes to both. That it potentially could be a good first step. They are getting some money to a project that is designed to actually deal with Gen X immediately. But it's also politics, because Governor Cooper asked for some money that would go to his state departments to help deal with this issue. And Republicans' immediate response was, wait a minute, why has your department not already seen this? Why has this been an issue that's gone back 37 years, which would go back to the first administration of Jim Hunt and would have been an issue under Republican and Democratic administrations? Why has this just emerged now that we know that this chemical is in the water? So I think that they do have some good reason to think that these entities that they're wanting to have the money toward, UNC Wilmington and this local public utility authority, to get this money to get the Gen X out of the water now might be a good idea. But they're also playing politics with Governor Cooper, saying, you asked for $2.5 million for the state agencies, we're going to wait and see on that.
It's also interesting that it's come to light in recent weeks that the former administration folks running the Department of Environmental Quality actually didn't tell the new folks running the Department of Environmental Quality under Cooper about this problem. And so they had to sort of breed, you know, these were new people put in place. They had to essentially discover it for themselves.
Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch, part of the NC Justice Center. Mitch Kokai is a political analyst at the John Locke Foundation. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.